Welcome to the Visceral Voice Podcast. I'm your host, Christine Schneider.
And I'm your co-host, Kimberly Doreen Burns.
Through this podcast, we aim to bring you the most current, up-to-date research on voice science, function, pain science, movement, and everything in between.
We also aim to bring you information and perspective from all angles of the theater industry.
I am on a quest to learn everything I can about the living, breathing body and its intricate connection to the voice. This podcast documents the continuation of my learning and my experience as a professional singer, a nutritional consultant, a movement practitioner, and a manual therapist.
And my learning as a professional performer, voice, acting, and musical theater educator.
Join us as we strive to provide current, knowledgeable, creative, and compassionate information
to help you restore, regain, and create happiness and success on your vocal journey.
In this episode, Kimberly and I interview American mezzo-soprano Eve Giuliotti and American soprano Karen Slack, two friends who met at the Curtis Institute of Music, both with extraordinary resumes, including the Metropolitan Opera. Really awesome ladies with incredible careers, and we had so much fun talking with them. So I hope that you enjoy Kimberly and my conversation with Eve and Karen as the voice of the opera singer. Hello, Eve and Karen. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being with us here today.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having us.
Hi. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. So I would love to start today by just having you talk to us, kind of run us through your artistic journey, and including maybe your voice type and just some highlights of your performances. And actually, Karen, if you don't mind, why don't we start with you?
My name is Karen Slack. I'm a soprano. I guess if I had to categorize myself, I would be considered what we call a lirico spinto in Italian, which is basically means lyric push. It's a light push. So it's lighter than a dramatic soprano, but it's heavier than what we call a lyric soprano. I came into opera when I was about 14 years old. I was in the ninth grade and I attended the Philadelphia High School for Creative and Performing Arts. And my choral teacher loved opera. So every day opera was blasting throughout the hallways in school. And my first opera singers that I ever heard were Maria Callas and Jesse Norman. And it changed my life because I finally heard a voice that was similar to mine in a way. I didn't grow up singing in the church, but I grew up like loving music and listening to music because my parents played the radio all the time. And I always had this big kind of loud voice. And because I didn't grow up singing like a lot of gospel music, I didn't have a chest voice, a big, heavy chest voice. I just had this big head voice. And but anyway, finally, I found my people, I guess they say. And I went to my first opera, live opera, when I was 16 years old at the Opera Company of Philadelphia. And it was Carmen with Denise Graves as in the title role. She was very early in her career at that point, and it just changed my life. I was like, I want to do that. I just fell in love with the whole genre. I studied privately at the Settlement Music School down on Queen Street in South Philly. So after I graduated from high school, I went to the Hart School of Music. I needed money to go back to school. And so I entered this competition called the Rosa Poncel International Competition of the Vocal Arts, and it was held in Lincoln Center. 3 weeks later, I was the winner. I was 18 years old and won $50,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I moved to New York City, studied privately, and was supposed to make my big grand debut in Lincoln Center as a 20-year-old. And that didn't happen. I decided that that's not what I wanted to do. And I got kicked out of the program, sent back to Philadelphia. Yeah. And anyway, I was sitting in a Wendy's restaurant and a couple of kids from the Curtis Institute of Music, whom I did not know. And I did not know that Curtis even existed, which is strange, right? Being a Philadelphian born and raised in the city. Just met these kids. They took me back to Curtis. We jammed out for each other and got a call from the head of the music department, head of the voice department at Curtis, inviting me to audition. And that's where I spent 6 years in Curtis and started singing.
Oh my gosh. And you two met at Curtis. Is that correct?
Yeah, we met at Curtis.
Amazing. So Eve, why don't you tell us about your artistic journey?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I love hearing Karen's story. I don't know if I ever really heard you tell that story, which is so, it's so interesting to, you know people for so long, and it's always so interesting to find out what their path was into singing, because everyone has such a different point of view and experience into how they kind of found it or how it found them. My experience was very different. I kind of grew up in a sleepy suburb of Philadelphia, go Eagles. And I didn't know what opera was at all, but I was in love with musical theater. I mean, in love. I was addicted to A Chorus Line and Les Miserables. I didn't know what opera was until I was in high school and my choir director recognized that I had an instrument in there, and he started talking to me about opera and encouraged me to start working with a teacher that was going to teach me classical technique. I had been taking voice lessons from when I was about 13, but you know, from the nice lady down the street that plays the piano and doesn't really, I learned the kind of standard pop song book, but it was clear that I had this voice that didn't quite fit a musical theater sound, if you will. I was Mother Abbess in The Sound of Music when I was 13 years old in my town, and people just really responded to me in that way. When I made a sound, it really moved people, and I knew that I had something, but I didn't know how it was going to end up. I wanted to be an actor. You know, I wanted to go to school for acting. And then I got into Tisch and I got into CMU for voice, and I had to make a decision. And I realized that the thing that distinguished me was my voice. So I decided to pursue training my voice. And then if I wanted to go back into acting, that it would be there after I had kind of finished this course of study. But of course, once I made that choice, then the road, you know, the fork in the road and the path starts taking you down to another place that you didn't quite expect. And so I started studying classically when I was 17, and I saw my first opera when I was 17. I was in Pittsburgh for that year. I saw Don Giovanni at Pittsburgh Opera, and I didn't love it. You know, I mean, I watched it and I was like, I don't get it. I didn't relate. I didn't find my way in yet. And then I transferred to Manhattan School of Music in New York City. I love Pittsburgh. It's a great town. But as an 18-year-old at this point, I just really wanted to be where the action was. So I transferred to Manhattan School of Music, and I had an incredible remainder of my undergrad there. When I saw Renee Fleming, for me, it was Renee Fleming, was the one that made the light bulb go off. And she was singing American opera. She was singing Susanna and Carlisle Floyd's Susanna at the Metropolitan Opera. And it was at that moment where I felt an identification to the art form, where I knew I had something to contribute and to say. And after undergrad at Manhattan School of Music, I was accepted to the Curtis Institute of Music, where I met Miss Karen Slack, and I was there as well for 5 years and graduated with a master's, and then was thrown out into the real world to sink or swim.
Karen, can you tell us a little bit about this program that you offer?
Yeah, Conversations was born out of a table talk with my husband during the pandemic. around March, I guess, and right early on in all of this chaos. And it was just a way for me to connect with my colleagues, people who I am friends with and people who I admire their art. And basically what we do, a conversation over a glass of wine. But, you know, and I didn't want it to be about people's talents. I wanted it to be a place where people can come and tell their story and talk and share in a way. And I had no idea that that it was going to become a thing. And so many people, it's interesting, like, while not a lot of people watch it live, like, because people are busy now and they like have stuff to do, so many people share it, and in like really kind of like industry leaders and artists and other genres like love this show. And I had no idea that I even possessed that skill to have someone be able to sit down and just start talking. You know what I mean? I just had no idea, but I love it. And I love everybody who comes on the show. I just love to give other people a platform and a position to just shine outside of the thing that everyone knows you as doing.
To the listeners, check it out, Kiki Conversations. And you can find that on YouTube.
Yes, we have our own YouTube channel, Kiki and K Conversations with a K. And it's on my Facebook page, my fan page, Karen Slack. And so, you know, I think I'm going to put the episodes and start a podcast. And it's sort of growing, but at the same time, I'm back to work. So growth is slow, but I'm blessed. But Kiki Conversations, Conversations with a K. So
I am so excited to be connected with some fellow Philly ladies. Fantastic. I come in contact, Christine does too, with so many people in the theater industry. I did study both styles of singing, but I wound up choosing musical theater as where my voice belonged. And Eve, just thank you for sort of highlighting that you also have musical theater experience, but you had to be aware of where your voice excited people and where mm-hmm. it belonged. Because I think so often people are confused, especially at the age of 18, like where to go mm-hmm. with that. So I think that's an important thing for our young listeners to understand, is to sort of observe where your voice fits and where it excites people. On that note, so curious about both of your thoughts in the differences in technique between the two, between opera singing and musical theater.
To be totally fair, I think Eve is the better person to answer the question.
Thanks, Karen.
Yes, because as she knows, I am like opera and hip hop. You ask me anything about opera, you ask me anything about hip hop, I got you. Well,
let's talk about, that's fascinating, because we know as singers, there are like a plethora of styles here. We don't have to pinpoint just two. So Karen, talk about the differences between those two.
Wow. Well, of course, you know, opera is the first, is the music of Italy, right? Of course, you know, it was originated in Italy. And I'll go back and talk about a little bit about the style of opera and music theater. I mean, opera, we don't use microphones, of course. You know, we work years and years and years to perfect the balance between the breath and resonance. You know, using resonance is our microphone, naturally, in our cheeks and our chest, you know, all of these things. But I'll let Eve talk more about the difference between opera and music theater. But I mean, as far as hip hop is concerned, I love hip hop. I grew up in just after the golden era of hip hop, you know, 90s, 2000. You know, I grew up in North Philadelphia. And so there was always music playing all through the neighborhood. And so that's just my foundation and my basis of like soul music. But I think that that's the reason why I love both hip hop and opera, because they are the grandiose. You know, every MC is like, I'm the best. I am the greatest. I'm better. I beat everyone, you know. And on stage, you have to have that same persona, you know, of taking the stage, singing the highest notes, holding the notes the longest, and, you know, being with these gigantic costumes and, you know, these broad, gigantic emotions. And I think that that's probably why I like both genres, and they're so connected to who I am.
Yeah, I had never really made that connection between the grandiosity of hip hop and opera. And I love that. I love that idea of that kind of larger than life, omnipotent kind of energy force, you know, that kind of comes out of a hip hop artist and that comes out of an opera singer. You know, this is so, it's always, I always like kind of tiptoe around talking technique, but this is the place to do it, obviously, because I have worked with many, many, many teachers, and have finally landed in a home that I feel is, for me, balanced with pedagogy and applicable execution of technique. It has only been within the past 10 years where I've truly had a kind of pedagogical background as far as how my technique is being explained to me. And every singer works differently. And some singers really rely on visualizations, and because singing is an abstract thing, right? You can't control your voice. You're working in a second degree of control, right? You can't dig into your body and say, okay, larynx, I want you to, you know, stretch horizontally now, cause we're going to go up for this high note. And I don't want you to overpressurize. And I don't, you know, you can't, it's like driving a car with your eyes closed. And you have to know the map of the road so well that you know where to turn and you know where to stop and you know where to reverse and things like that, right? That's kind of the metaphor for me for singing, because it's not something that you can really have a tactile, direct relationship with the cause and effect. So much of it is muscle memory and reinforcing the right pathway to achieve your technical goal and essentially memorizing it. And you reinforce it enough times. I mean, that's practice, right? Practice for anybody. You reinforce it enough times so you can drive with your eyes closed, right? And if somebody throws a big boulder in the road, you know how to navigate, or a big piece of phlegm on your vocal cords, you know how to navigate it without completely running off the road, right? Because you've memorized this physical pathway of how to technically execute what you're working on. So, I mean, for me, that's how I think about practice and singing. And I work on a regular basis with a team of people that I trust that have known me for many years. And sometimes I'll add a new person on the team and get some really interesting information, but I'll always refer back to that team of people to say, so, you know, we were working on this and this was a suggested way of kind of thinking about the X, Y, and Z, and then we'll talk about it and we'll kind of translate it and explain it so it makes sense to me and I'm not just throwing darts at a wall, you know, or with no target. But it took me a really long time to really rely on that as my process. And then to go back to musical theater, if I'm walking around my house just doing whatever, I'd never sing operatically. I always sing kind of musical theater-y. It's kind of my default instinctual method of expression. I guess the person that I most admire, two people that I admire that kind of, I think, straddle the two techniques, like a healthy mixed belt and then a healthy head voice, are Audra, of course. Yeah. Audra McDonald.
Of course.
And I don't know how Patti LuPone does it, but Miss LuPone, I love you. You're amazing. I mean, this woman has voice for days, and it's much, I feel like it's a chest with head in it, right? Like it's a healthy belt. And it's a really focused sound. I mean, I think talking about microphones is a whole separate conversation that also feeds into how you are executing your voice, essentially, how you're utilizing your technique. Karen and I were talking about this now that we're kind of in this COVID world. So much of opera is happening via mic, right? Because we're doing it virtually and we're mic'd up in some way. And so it's like, how are we accommodating microphones to pick up all the overtones that are happening when we're singing live? How do we capture the colors of a live voice resonating in space? In live space, in sound wave, tactile space, through
a captured technology.
We're running through the same thing in all of our self-tapes, I think, across the map of being a singer, no matter where you fit, right? Because we're taping on, you know, phones and computers, like you mentioned, right. And our voices are not translating the way that we're used to hearing them. But just to go back to the question at hand, and I'm so curious, let's go back to Karen for a second. And just like, if you can be as transparent as possible, what are your feelings about belting?
You know, okay. So my first introduction to what we call belting would be gospel music, you know, and I sat in church and you can hear those women and they have been singing like that for decades. You know, you hear someone like Patti LaBelle, who, you know, you go back to some old tapes of her when she was like 16 or 17 or 18 and still has the same instrument at like 77 years old. Of course, you know, it has wear and tear on it, of course, for years. But I think that if you learn how to do it in a healthy way, I don't know how those gospel women do that, because there's no training in that. You know what I mean? In that world, of course, the ones that record. But when you go to any church USA, any Black church USA, and these women have been singing like this for 50 years, you go, my God, there is a way to do it healthily. Now, we do know, or maybe not, the tragedies of many singers, you know, who don't learn how to belt well, or, you know, the injuries that happen in the vocal art form, you know, particularly in music theater. Of course, that's the dark side of it.
I was just going to say that I think it was Christine that where the light bulb went off for me, where I understood, because I was completely ignorant about belting. Throughout my whole musical theater experience in life, it was always a mix, right? And sometimes it had a little too much weight in it and what have you, but it was never like a pure belt. I haven't cultivated my belt, and I don't really know. I know a little bit more about how to belt now, but I don't spend time developing it. And that's the thing. Belting is a technique and it needs to be taught properly. There's a specific way to belt safely. And frankly, it's just like any other muscle. It's like, if you utilize your belt longer than you stretch your head voice, then it's going to take precedence, right? Like if you work your biceps, but never your triceps, you're going to have bigger biceps, you know? And I don't, as a mezzo particularly, I don't see any issue with healthily cultivating what one would consider bringing chest voice up. For me, like an F, F sharp is, if I'm vocalizing, I will vocalize full chest up through that area. And then I will go between chest and head just to keep that flexibility. So when I'm singing the dramatic roles, I have the facility to make a choice. And I really fully believe that it is important to educate professional voice users about their options. You know, there is a way to healthily, particularly, you know, women, I think the male facility is different, but, and I don't know as much about that, but for a female belt, there is a way to teach that pedagogically, safely, and correctly, and to develop it. And I think it's a really exciting sound. I don't want to hear it all the time. And when I hear it, when I hear it not being executed healthily, it's really difficult for me to listen to. But when it's executed well, like classical singing, when it's executed well, it's thrilling. It's another way to use the palette of the voice.
Hey everyone, I hope that you are enjoying today's episode. I just wanted to take this break to tell you about our membership. We are opening enrollment for 4 days only, March 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th, to begin on March 9th. We meet virtually twice a week on Tuesdays at 7:30 Eastern Standard Time and Fridays at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time for a whole bunch of self-massage techniques. You will also receive The Body of Singing, which is an 8-week course, which is a $360 value. You will receive an ever-expanding video library with over 70 tutorial videos and informational videos. You get 20% off master classes with master teachers, as well as 20% off all of my anatomy classes, and you will receive a wellness package. Again, this is opening enrollment March 5th through the 8th. to join us for the membership. It is a 3-month commitment and a 6-month membership. And if you email us at theviscervoice@gmail.com with your interest in the membership, you will receive your first week membership for free. And we look forward to seeing you at the Visceral Voice membership. Now back to the interview. So here on the Visceral Voice podcast, we aim to challenge stigmas around vocal injury, and we like to discuss vocal health with you both being in the opera world. How common are vocal injuries in the opera world? Do people openly talk about vocal injuries? Have either of you had any kind of difficulties that you'd be comfortable sharing? And if so, how did you personally cope with it?
So I really wanted to speak on this because I do think that we need to also understand that professional voice users are vocal athletes. Opera singers are vocal athletes.
Yes.
Your body is part of your voice in a holistic way. So when you are experiencing stress, if you're having hormone fluctuations, if you've just had a baby, if you're, you know, there are, if you're going through menopause, like there are so many aspects that can affect what's happening on these little vocal folds. Things happen. So I wanted to just share something. Because I thought about this and I was like, no, I really want to talk about it. I wanted to share something that happened to me at the end of September, particularly with mask wearing. Now that we're all in the pandemic, we have to wear our masks to keep ourselves and everyone safe. Please wear your mask. I have a 7-year-old child and we live in Brooklyn and we have been riding our bicycles. And as I'm teaching my child how to stay alive on a bicycle in Brooklyn and going through the park and not hitting the dog and not hitting the toddler, and I am yelling directions. I'm not angrily yelling, but he's 10 feet in front of me. We're outside and I have a mask on. And I'm repeatedly yelling instructions through the mask for like 45 minutes a day because we would go take a bike ride every day. I was in the middle of a show and one day at the end of this, I went to rehearsal and I sang. And then I immediately felt something happen. And I was like, this was like later in the evening and I felt something not right. It was like I couldn't clear my throat and I was like, uh-oh, I think I have a little hemorrhage. I hate the word hemorrhage because it sounds really dramatic. It sounds worse than it is. And so I immediately went to this fantastic doctor who scoped me and said, yes, in fact, you have a small hemorrhage on your right fold. I went immediately on vocal rest, took a round of steroids, and was on modified vocal rest for the next 3 weeks. And continued rehearsals lip syncing because we had pre-recorded a lot of our role. And so we were staging it online. And then I was 2 weeks before performance, I was fine, ready to go. I started some voice therapy and my teacher walked me through just kind of getting my endurance back and everything was fine. But I modified my behavior because I learned that speaking in the mask is so bad for me. I bought a microphone. I bought a little portable mic that I wear underneath my mask that has an amplifier. And I look a little crazy. And people think I'm giving tours of Brooklyn when I'm walking around with my kid. But it's like, but I don't care. It's like, this is what I'm doing to maintain my healthy vocal hygiene. Because I understand that my vocal use outdoors in the mask for me is not, it's not healthy. So I've figured out this little hack to amplify my voice in public. I'm at the drugstore. I'm not yelling at the pharmacist, my last name, you know, it's just so much easier. And it just really took all the effort on my voice. And so, you know, I learned a lot from that experience, but I got the intervention and the help. And if you treat a vocal hemorrhage immediately with proper care, you're fine. There's no long-term damage that's going to happen. The long-term damage happens if you ignore it and you try to work through it and sing through it. That's where you can get yourself into trouble. And I also go get scoped at least once a year. I get an annual checkup because I just think it's really important to know what's happening.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that, Eve. And to the listeners,
Eve is a phenomenal singer. She sings at the Metropolitan Opera. So this is a voice that knows what it is doing. And it's a she's a vocal athlete, and this is what can happen. And you are so right. I mean, Kimberly and I have talked about it on other episodes within this series of how the mask affects us in different ways. Maybe it creates additional tongue tension in one, or someone's jutting their jaw forward in another. Or so wonderful of you to be aware of that and how that is for you. Going back a little bit, do you feel like vocal injury is more common in the opera world than we know about?
I think it is something that is, it's just like a sports injury. Like on regular use, it is something that can happen through no fault of the singer or through no fault of technical execution. In this instance, I happened to be using my voice in not an ideal way, and I learned a tremendous lesson. But in general, you know, it could happen, you know, just things happen. You could have a coughing fit and it could happen, you know. And so I think it's important to say that it's okay. And the most important thing is to not deny it, but to get intervention early and take care of yourself. Like the more you know, the better equipped you are to make the right choices for you, to stay healthy and to take care of yourself.
How about Karen? Have you had any difficulties yourself? How did you cope with it?
Yeah, I'm not at all shy about speaking about this topic because I think that it's important to demystify the idea that if a singer has an injury, that you're not good or you're tainted goods versus if Michael Jordan, you know, or the quarter LeBron James and they, you know, get an ankle sprain or tear there, like you said, ACL, the knee, whatever. And it's like, oh, you know, the season is out, but everyone anticipates them coming back in the next year and still performing at that high elite level. I mean, I grew up in a house, my father was a basketball coach. So injury is a part of the job. I mean, you know, like Eve said, she mostly hit it out of the park speaking about it. Do I think it happens? Yes. Do I know that it happens frequently within our industry? Yes. There is a lot of shame and cover in it, you know, as well as vocal surgeries. You know, it is a thing that happens. When I was a student at Curtis, I think I had gotten two issues with hemorrhaging, but it was because of birth control. And it was also because of my voice changing and my body changing, and I had to adjust my technique a little bit, but mostly it was the birth control, the hormones. But then I found out that I have two beautiful veins running down the edges of my cords. So that means that I have to take extra precautions because I am more susceptible to injury than other people. And you can see it when I get scoped. You can see those pretty little things running down the front and on the edges where the cords come together. So why? I'm not going to be ashamed of that. That's my reality. Like, so you know what I mean? Like, it is what it is for me. It's a reality that I have to be extra careful and that I can't take birth control. And I have to be aware when I'm on my cycle that my cords are swollen, which means that I have even more, you know, be even more careful with how I use my instrument, how often I sing, how when I'm yelling or when I'm speaking, you know, because that is real for me.
Well, and how wonderful it is that you know that anatomy, you know, that you've been scoped and you know that is part of your own anatomy. And both of you have mentioned hormones, and how true is that? The hormones coming into play, how true is it that, I mean, we have to get out and perform regardless of what we have gone through or are going through in our life. You just can't separate any of this from the voice, and it can absolutely all come into play. So thank you both so much for sharing about your views on this. And I am so happy to hear that you are both open and willing to talk about this in the opera industry. I really applaud you for that.
Well, thank you for also creating the platform as a resource for for us singers. And hopefully we can continue this conversation and make people aware and free them from whatever fear they may be feeling about this topic, you know?
Let's talk a little bit about both of you and your personal training regimens. How often do you personally take lessons? Do you have a teacher? And how often do you see an ENT for your vocal health?
I do have a teacher. I see my teacher regularly. Well, I have two. I have two, actually, people that I work with, one on the West Coast and one on the East Coast.
Me too.
Yeah, because I mean, I used to live in San Francisco. And so I was in the program in San Francisco Opera. And so Cherry Greenewalt was my teacher. And even after I left the program, I would still work with her. But I regularly work with someone in Philadelphia, and pretty much once a week, particularly in the pandemic, like later in the pandemic, I was like, I had to do a couple of virtual concerts, and I was like, okay. Too much wine, too much, like, you know, chilling out, too much crying during the pandemic. I got to get back on the horse, you know, as they say. I'm not a big practicer, depending on what I have going on. Like, you know, this kind of regimen of beating something, drilling something in, it just depends on what it is I'm preparing. But I'm at the point now where I do try to sing at least once a day, scales or passages. You know, it just depends for me, because it can get heavy in my mind, in my spirit at times, particularly during this time, and practicing for something that's coming up and then it gets canceled. You know, it's just hard for me. I have to mind my mental and my spiritual health. So I put a lot of pressure on myself. And so I just try to practice healthily, and not so much about my voice, but my mental, keeping my space as sane as possible in that way. And of course, when I'm in production, I'm preparing for certain things. I am a big coacher, though. I do love to coach. Some people don't like to coach. I do love to get with a pianist or a conductor and work, and that's how I prefer to work.
Me too.
And I just want to say something quickly about the injury part. I am thankful, grateful that I had that happen to me, because I know my voice better. I feel things before they may happen, or I can get myself out of maybe trouble before it goes worse, because I have had something happen to my instrument in that way. And so I don't think I would have had that same awareness had it not been for my experience.
Like Karen, I am bicoastal in my teachers. I lived in San Francisco for about a year and a half. And while I was out there, I started working with Julia Hunt Nielsen, who is a direct descendant, as far as she was trained by David Jones, who's in New York. So those are the two. So they kind of work together. It's the same technique. And so I work with both of them, and then I coach with Tony Manoli, and I coach with other coach conductors that, like Karen said, that can really prepare. I love to rehearse. I really do. But honestly, through the pandemic, I lost all my work. So I couldn't afford to have lessons and coachings as much as I would have liked. So I try to make sure that I make some, at least one coaching or two lessons, like two sessions a month, just to continue checking in, unless I have a very specific project that I'm working out. I found in general, you know, this pandemic has really put a lens up to so much. And I'm also a mother. So I wake up and I'm on my voice. My child likes to talk. And he, from the time he wakes up, he is engaging me and I am speaking. And so if I have not done something as far as a vocal warm-up, then it is possible that I'm actually using my voice not in the best way throughout the whole day, whether or not I end up singing or not. So I like to, I like my straws. I have like a straw in the shower. I have a straw in the studio, and I'll just do like maybe just a couple minutes of just getting the coupe, getting the fine edges of the chords, just getting that straw work, getting the voice warmed up just a little bit throughout the day. So I'm not using it in a bad way throughout the day, because there's a lot of vocal use going on in my house, whether or not I'm singing. And then as far as singing, you know, I find practicing singing right now is a lot harder if I don't have a project, because it's a little heartbreaking. It's a little heartbreaking to be like working on a role and like, who knows if I'll ever get to do it. You know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I should be more optimistic, but unless I have something concrete that I know is going to happen, it's been hard for me to motivate as far as like working on a role that I've always wanted to do, it working on a role that ended up getting canceled and things like that. And I'm trying to work on that to shift, because I do think it's always important to have goals and to have things to work towards, even if they're your own goals. But I love a deadline. I love a deadline. It really motivates me. I guess I'm a procrastinator.
My next question, and Karen, if you don't mind, I'll start with you. What do you think it'll be like when you have the opportunity to step back up on stage with castmates, or to walk into that audition room in person live, to come back into your craft? What do you think it'll be like for you? What do you think it'll be like in that experience?
Very emotional. I think the whole rehearsal room is gonna be a big old puddle of tears, even from the hardest person, you know, on down. I mean, I already was in rehearsal in Houston. We were doing the workshop of a new opera called A Snowy Day that was supposed to premiere this year. Right now, this time, but of course, because of COVID, it was canceled and actually rescheduled till next winter. And so we're down here doing the workshop, and we had done some staging things, and it was very emotional to be in their room already. Mm-hmm. I've sort of already been in the space. And I remember the first virtual offering that I was asked to do by Madison Opera. I was rehearsing with my pianist, and we were weeping at the end of Visitarte. I mean, of course, Visitarte is a fabulous piece, but just to be making music and resonating in that space with the piano and the voice, and it was very overwhelming. I didn't realize how much I missed it. And honestly, I didn't even want to sing opera, and I didn't even want to sing much early in the pandemic. And then George Floyd was murdered, and all I wanted to do was sing. That was the way that I could express myself the best. But I didn't want to sing opera. So I just started with like spirituals and hymns and kind of like things that resonated and connected me in a different way. But I would imagine when we are fully back as a business, we're going to make music in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's going to be different. And I think it's necessary.
So just to pick up on that beautiful thing that you said, Karen, is that, you know, I don't think any of us can return to music. Now I'm going to get emotional. I don't think any of us can return to the music unchanged with a greater sense of importance and urgency. I've always been a big proponent of asking the question, why, you know, why are we doing this piece? Why are we singing this music? And then when it's taken away from you, you're propelled to appreciate it in a much deeper way and to understand that it's truly a gift that we get to do and we get to share. And it's a communal gift. And when we're in that live space resonating and create, essentially, I think we're creating life, you know, around us, that we're creating something that's intangible, that is reaching our spirits and our humanity in a way that only the arts can. Knowing what it's like to have it taken away, we can never come back to it again in the same way. So I know that I will move with much more purpose and intention when I have I've always been grateful, but I think purpose and intention and appreciation when I'm able to really return to share my gift in a live space with an audience.
Can I just say, I have always been a gigantic fan of my friend Eve.
I love you. Thanks.
Yeah, I love you. And she knows this. Like, from the moment I saw her, heard her for the first time when we were all both very young singers, I just thought, that girl, not only can she sing, but she tells a story. And she's never, ever lost that magic that she does. And I just, and many people know I love singers for the most part, but my friends can't really do the thing, you know? So, I look forward to artists like Eve, who put the stories first, who understand the importance of that part, as well as the singing, the beautiful singing. I look forward to seeing what those people do. And I would consider myself one of those people as well.
Yes.
Embracing that side of myself, because I always had a beautiful, big voice kind of thing. And I could just do that thing, right? You know, and Eve, of course, a big, beautiful voice, but she had this extra thing. And so I look forward to those people who are creating new platforms, new works, the urgency of getting these stories out. You know, I'm really excited for those people, for those artists, you know. Of course, the Varied Puccini, the, you know, all those things as well, but I'm looking forward to what American opera presents on the other side, you know.
For the sake of time, let's move on to our signature questions. The first signature question is, how often do you think about your voice? Eve, we'll start with you.
All the time. It's part of me, but it's also this, it lives on its own. So me and my voice. Yeah. All the time. It's part of me.
Yeah. Pretty much all the time. I'm not as bad as tenors, where I'm constantly checking.
There it is. Oh, Lord.
I'm checking to see if the high notes are always there, but you know, tenors.
Yes. Oh, what is some advice that you would like to give to an aspiring young performer?
Never forget why you started to sing in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Why you fell in love with it. And you have to hold on to that. Almost like a stranglehold, because everyone will try to
try and teach it out of you.
Yeah.
I would just say, always trust your gut, mm-hmm. yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
What is something new about the voice that you learned this week, Karen?
That is aging like wine, just gets better with time.
Yes. Just go with Karen on that one, because that was just perfect. I have really nothing.
Right. And if someone would have said that, it wouldn't have resonated when I was, you know, a younger singer, because you think, oh, you know, I'm making these amazing sounds. And, you know,
right.
Girl, you thought you were, and they were okay, but
well, they were okay. Actually, to piggyback on that, I think, you know, your voice carries your life, right? So when you sing, you are singing your experience. And so that's why, of course, it gets better with time, because you're richer, more developed, tastier, better vintage.
Right. Outside of what you do as a career, what are you currently learning?
I'm learning how to produce.
Ooh, yeah, cool.
I'm learning how to be a producer. I mean, Karen has, I'm going to just plug the radio opera now, but we are developing radio play as opera, based on an adaptation of an incredible play by Winter Miller called No One Is Forgotten. And Karen we're actually going to finally sing together, because Karen and I are doing this together. But, you know, I've been working on it since April, and I'm the creative producer and one of the singers, but I'm really learning what it's like to take an idea and to make it actually happen. So that's been I've been spending a lot of time on that, which has been really exciting and empowering.
Well, I'm reading a lot about a lot of poetry, a lot of, you know, stories of Black women through history. I was earlier in the pandemic, I was taking a libretto writing class, which, you know, my friends are like, you're always talking about these amazing stories that you come across. You need to write your own damn libretto. And I'm like, how the hell does one write a libretto, you know? And so, like, of course, like, I don't know. I know how to sing people's words, but to actually put a libretto together is not like writing poetry or not like writing a book. It's a very specific thing. And so I started doing that, but then I got a lot of opportunities to become an administrator and an advocate for singers in this industry. And so I'm learning how to be an opera administrator with the various positions that I've been blessed to have during this time. And so that's a different skill set too. How does one cast? How does one choose which productions get done in what seasons? How to put an opera season together? How to hire a conductor? Like all of these things that, you know, how to read a contract, how to get a, you know, develop relationships with unions and all this stuff. So that's what I'm learning right now.
What do we wish we had learned sooner? What's our hindsight 2020 moment? So Eve, we'll start with you.
I don't know. I mean, I really, you know, one answer is I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. And I've learned things in their time, you know, like where you can't have regrets. You just have to learn and move on and continue moving forward. One of my mottos is adapt and pivot. Because you get the information, you digest it, you adapt and you pivot, right? Like you just keep moving forward. This is like the Philly girl in me, but never give up, you know,
yes, girl.
Rocky all the way.
Yes,
so,
yes.
You know what I'm saying? So like that's always been that fire in me where it's just like, I learned from an early age that, that you never give up. And so, but that means also to work smart and not to just blindly try to knock down a wall that's not budging. But I think we all learn the lessons. We need to keep our eyes and ears open, keep our hearts open, learn to think critically, trust yourself. And then you learn the lessons that you're supposed to learn, but you've got to be open to learn them.
Karen, what about you? What do you wish you had learned sooner?
How to be a producer, how to curate, you know, projects and things for myself. I wish that I'd had learned that in school. I think those things were happening for us by our wonderful, illustrious director, but I wish I would have been encouraged to do them as well for myself more. I think some people just have it naturally and other people find their way and then other people never figure it out, which is fine too, you know, but I think that business skill set is what we need now and what we'll need in the future. And I just want to say, yes, I'm all here for the Philly girls scrappy. I am elegantly scrappy because as everybody knows, my friends are like, I don't know how you just manage to keep doing the thing and think and just always finding ways to make stuff happen. It's like, I don't know any other way. It's just it's natural for me. Okay, well, that's not going to work.
We don't take no for an answer.
And if you tell me no, I promise you in due time, you'll go, well, damn, you made it happen anyway. I sure did.
Yes,
that's
girl.
Right. Yes. Can we get a round of applause?
Love that.
You're going to wish you said yes the first time.
Hello.
Yes, exactly. So I'm curious, Karen, before we end the episode, you had mentioned reading, you've been reading a lot and you've been reading poetry. Do you have one that kind of sticks out as your favorite?
Well, I've been reading a lot of Audre Lorde. I've been reading a lot of Pat Parker, Nikki Giovanni, Angela Davis. And I was reading a book called Black Girl Magic. And it's a book of poetry from all these amazing young poets, you know, younger in our generation, you know, because, of course, there's the height of like the movement in the 60s and 70s where just so many Black feminists and you know, womanists and Black lesbians were like so empowered and kind of, you know, they're our mothers and our aunts, you know, in a way. And I found like, well, where are the women in my age group? And I'm flipping in this book, you know, Mahogany Brown, who's a fantastic young poet and author. And my friend, Bianca Lynn Spriggs, who's an amazing poet and amazing author out of Kentucky, is in this book. And I'm like, you know, and she has this like, she already is an amazing, you know, like I said, poet and everything. And it's just so, it's so wonderful to see this kind of lineage move on and move forward. But right now, I'm curating a program called Say Their Names, and it's dedicated to Black women who started movements, you know, the anti-lynching movement, civil rights, Me Too, Say Her Name,
BLM.
So, yeah, BLM, all started by Black women.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, men get the shine, particularly for civil rights and, you know, what it was, the women that shifted the world in that way.
The listeners want to get in touch with you. What would be the best way to do that?
Social media is always Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Karen Slack, or Kiki Slack Soprano, which is my alias. And that's always the best way to catch me.
For me, you can email me through my website. And also, I would say don't DM me on Instagram because I don't really know how that works. But you can definitely message me over Facebook.
Oh, so incredible. Thank you, Eve and Karen.
Thank you both so much.
We have really, really, really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for everything that you bring to opera and that you bring as women and you bring to the world. And we are really looking forward to see all of these extraordinary projects that you are both working on. So thank you so much for being here and having this conversation with us today.
Thank you so much. And thanks, Karen.
Thanks, Eve. See you soon.
Okay. Thanks, you guys. Thanks.
Thank you all for listening. If you enjoy this podcast, please tell your colleagues, students, and friends to subscribe, rate, and write us a review.
You can find us on Instagram or Facebook, and feel free to check out my website at www.theVisceralVoice.com for information on programs and upcoming events. I hope you join us next time for another wonderful conversation on
The Visceral Voice.